Now, Roslyn, what forms can economic abuse take?
Look, the three main forms it's all based around power and control. So about having control over, and it's usually a woman's financial resources. So there's economic sabotage where a partner might stop the woman from working or studying, and that can take many forms, like preventing her from having any sleep, destroying a laptop, being threatening while she's in the workplace, which makes it difficult. All those sorts of strategies that make it difficult for a woman to earn her own money. And there's financial control, which means that they actually have keep a close watch on any expenses and any money that the woman might spend, maybe just giving her an allowance and not giving her access to actually have any financial resources. And some partners even, look at the mileage on the car to see where she's been and what she's been doing, and just having that a strong control and power over a woman's means to have financial resources.
So then, Rosalind, how can banks exacerbate these situations?
Well, the problem comes with some of the procedures and some of the processes that they have in place, where there might be joint bank holders. And so the partner might, or even credit in both names, so the partner can increase credit within the woman's name, take all the money out of the bank account, and then a woman reports that and says, look, this isn't my credit, this isn't my debt, and there's nothing that the bank can really do because it's in joint names. So there has to be some careful procedures, and it's not like they're doing this advertently. That, I mean, what you change one procedure and it's going to have implications for other sets of customers. So privacy is a very important part of banking procedures. And obviously you and I wouldn't want our privacy details given out to anybody else. But if you need to know what the partner's doing with your resources, I mean, and you have no control over that, that makes it quite difficult. And so even things about addresses, not having addresses available to someone on a joint bank account, that is a fine line with their privacy procedures. So there's those sorts of things, procedures. But there's also the other responsibility is about having staff aware, making them aware that this is going on in the customer's life, and impacts on their ability to pay credit cards or pay the mortgage, or if they've just left an abusive relationship and they have no financial resources available to them. So it's about skilling up staff so that they
obviously domestic violence is something people are increasingly aware of as a problem, but how likely are people to recognize economic abuse as an actual form of abuse?
That's a very good question, and that's what they are grappling with at the moment. And none of us are on top of it. It is very difficult to identify. I'm actually on my way now to the bank in order to listen to some calls, pre-recorded calls that the bank receives, so that we can listen and so that they can show us the sort of calls that they receive and what they're doing to identify it. But it might be a sense of fear. It might be a sense of not knowing anything about their banking, their finances, and that's often a good sign. Well, not a good sign, but a sign that this may be occurring, when the woman actually has no idea what the financial situation is within her own household, because it's all hidden from her. So there's many different things, but I'm doing a research project with ANZ about this at the moment, and so I'll probably know more in a little while, in a couple of months. But it's a difficult situation, and there are some key warning signs or identifiers that a lot of the family community services have identified with their own clients. And so they're like WIRE, for instance, the Women's Information Research Network is actually done a lot of work in terms of identifying these types of signals. So it's very difficult.
And you've also just talked a little bit about importance of prevention methods.
Yeah,
what forms might these take?
Financial education and financial literacy can help enormously in actually helping women understand what may be some of the signs, excuse me, of financial control, and sort of giving some indications about what they can do to prevent them or someone else taking advantage or exploiting their financial situation. So the point of, you know, not signing over, guarantor on different loans and trying and just the importance of keeping financial independence as much as possible. And it's not as easy as that. I mean, there's obviously a lot of complex things that arise and emotions that arise within relationships that prevent women from doing that. But financial education is when they leave the relationship is critical, because they've often had no sense of what's going on with the finances for maybe many years, and not knowing where to start to navigate the complex, you know, financial landscape that we face, how to pay off debts, how to get employment, how to, you know, reorganize your whole financial life when you've had maybe no control over it for many years. So financial education at points of critical points of recovery is really important. And the family services and the community services are really best place to provide that.
Okay, well, thank you so much for joining me this morning to speak about
it,
Rosalind, and good
thank
luck
you.
With your bank listenings.
Thank you very much.